Okay, so this is what we're doing. And this is what I was talking about. So all these wee symbols, but I think it's quite a nice example of how confusing the visual care system and sight care system can be. There's people that all do something to do with vision, but they all kind of overlap a wee bit, but what exactly do they do? And how do you access them? So these are the main ones I was going to cover today. There are others, but these are some of the ones that sprung to my mind anyway. The ones who are in green are more the community-based folk, and then the ones who are in blue are the ones who are based at the hospital, usually. And I'm just going to go through each of these and tell you kind of who they are and what they do and how you get a hold of them. First one are optometrists, which is me, which is high street opticians. Their role is just a primary care vision assessment. So primary care, like dentistry, like the GP. So they're basically the first port of call if there's any suspicion of visual impairment. And for that routine visual assessment, we look about the glasses side of things. We will identify the need for specialist assessment. So that's really, if we detect any sign of disease, we tend not to treat it, but we tend to refer then up to the hospitalised service for that to be monitored or treated appropriately. Although some opticians will specialise and will treat minor eye conditions, they've done some extra training, and will treat minor like eye infections and inflammations, and some also provide low vision aids depending on what area of Scotland you're living in. They are freely accessible. The point is that they are accessible, that you can make an appointment, you just call up and get an appointment. As I said before, they're free in Scotland. And if somebody is not able to leave the house, a lot of the opticians will have a home visit service called domiciliary service that's accessible. Next one's orthoptists. Not to be confused with orthotists, who deal with your ankle and feet and things. These are the guys that do specifically assessments and treatments for eye movement disorders. These are based in the hospital. They are predominantly dealing with children, predominantly dealing with the wee kids with squints. So when you see the guys with the glasses and the wee patch over their eyes, that'll be the orthoptist who deals with that side of things. But they will also deal with adults with eye movement disorders. And they typically, if you have neurological visual impairment, so people with stroke or other neurological conditions, they will often be seen initially by an orthoptist rather than an ophthalmologist. These are hospital-based, so they're not directly accessible from the community. You normally go via a referral through somebody else. Ophthalmologists are the doctors. Typically, again, not directly accessible. You do have a few eye casualty departments in Scotland, but those are becoming fewer and fewer as they try to get patients seen first of all by the optometrist rather than a casualty department. So they do the assessment, they'll do the prescription of any medication, they'll do any surgery that's required. The other thing to know, that if somebody is being registered partially sighted or sight impaired, that'll have to be done by a consultant ophthalmologist. It has to be somebody at that level to do the registration. ECLOs. These are maybe ones you haven't heard of before. They come by a few different names. In parts of Scotland, Northern Ireland, they're called eye clinic liaison officers. They're also called vision rehab officers. I can't remember, actually.
Vision support officers.
Thank you. I have three or four different names written down. I always get them mixed up. They're basically that person that connects a patient with a visual impairment from the point of diagnosis and ophthalmology to everything else beyond that. I think, what patients often say is that point of diagnosis is devastating, that point where you're saying you have glaucoma, you have macular degeneration, this is not going to get better. It's a horrific appointment for somebody to go through, and then they come out and that's it. Ophthalmology says, actually, well, there's nothing more we can do in terms of drugs. You have to go into the rehabilitation service, but there's a disconnect between the services, the link up of the services. So it's trying to connect people to the support services that are there. So it can be that emotional support, it can be just talking to that person about their diagnosis, giving them more information, but also then connecting them to the services, be it community, be it charity services, be it social care, be it other NHS services, but also then things like benefits, and connect them into the welfare sector and making sure they're getting access to what they need. And again, this is typically via your eye clinic, but you can access these folk directly. Are all the ECLOs in Scotland RNIB staff?
I can't say all of them, but
I think the good majority are.
Yeah, I think mostly VSOs in Scotland.
Okay. Yeah. Are they the same thing? Ish. Ish, okay. There's a lot of issues when you come into this part, because a lot of us do very similar things. A lot of the tests I do are the same as what an orthoptist does, and a lot of the tests that ophthalmologists do are the same. And when you come into the rehab and community support, there actually is a lot of overlap between what people do, and very much depends on where the person lives, who provides the specific services. I work with rehab workers in Glasgow, and I work with Katrina in Forth Valley, and then Fife Society for the Blind, and actually what the different people do in different areas is ever so slightly different. And so for this, I'm giving you an overview. Wherever you get your placement or your first workplace, and if you're working with people who have visual impairment, it's just good to figure out, just give somebody a call and say, so say if you're in Aberdeen, it'll be Northeast Sensory Services. And give them a call and say, right, how do I access you, and what area do you cover, and is there anybody else I should be talking to? It's just good to get to figure out in your local area what's happening. So there's a lot of then overlap between the sensory support teams and the low vision rehab officers. Sensory support, I tend to think of in terms of social care. So that next step, if somebody is registered with a visual impairment, they will automatically get a referral through to social care to assess their needs. So there'll be social care needs and technical needs, and they can provide equipment, advice, again advice on benefits, employment, and then looking at the wider issues like housing issues. Again, an automatic referral in many cases, but you can contact them directly for a direct referral into the service. And again, the waiting time for support teams varies hugely from area to area. And then the rehab officers, I think of them more as the one-to-one and providing the training, although it does vary, as you were speaking to Katrina about, some of that training is a mobility training, so the white cane training, but you've also training within the home and use of ADL skills and new strategies to make best use of the vision that the person has. Again, that can be via social care or can be via a direct referral into the service itself. And then, of course, you have all the charities that are there. At the end, I've got just some different names, but you've got some of the national charities like the RNIB. You have the local societies like Visibility, and then you have societies that are specific to specific conditions. So Macular Society, you've got Glaucoma Society, and you'll also have maybe quite local support groups, and that are more to do with getting people together for just discussion and chat and support through that contact with others who are with the same problem. So my next question, and I'm going to throw this one open to you because I'm not a rehab worker. What do you think that your role is in the support of people with visual impairment? I'd like to hear what you think that you might see yourself doing when you get out into practice.
Enable independence in any everyday activities.
Yeah.
Because of the visual impairment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Signposting as well.
Yeah.
A lot of signposting. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. So it means that you need to have that knowledge there to be able to signpost to those services. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think those are the main ones. I think that's kind of the general rule of all of the occupational therapy is about restoring and maintaining ability to function independently. So this is very much not my comfort zone, this is much rehab, but when I was trying to read around it and think about what I think OT should do, so feel free to disagree with this, I think it's important that you understand the visual impairments and what's the difference between macular degeneration and glaucoma, what's the impact that has on function, so you can then, informs how you approach the patient, also informs the therapy that you deliver to them and how that is tailored to their needs. I think a certain amount of it is about informing. So you're talking about signposting. People struggle to understand visual impairment, and especially if they've come out of a clinical appointment where people, I think it's retained something like a fifth of the information they're given, and it can be difficult to understand. So when you think about visual acuity and visual field loss and contrast sensitivity, that means nothing to somebody. They just know what, they can't see the TV anymore, or they can't see their grandchildren's faces. So it's trying to maybe explain to them what has gone wrong, what isn't functioning as well as it was, but then also saying, well, the other bits are all working really well. So you've lost your central vision, but your peripheral vision is still intact, your eye movements are still intact, and saying that maybe then those are the things that we can use to address what has been lost. It's a wee bit about assessment, possibly visual assessment. We are practicing a wee bit today, but then assessment, as you would be doing yourself, of their goals and their needs. within the house based on that knowledge of their visual impairment, and then you've got that management. In terms of I'm involved in stroke rehab, and when I think of visual impairment and stroke treatments, I tend to think of them in three groups. You have restitution, which is trying to make the vision better, which is not really what we're trying to do. That's more the realm of ophthalmology. We leave that to them. But we're thinking then of the other two. So compensation, which is using the visual skills that are left or the cognitive skills that are there and using them in a different way to address the visual impairment. Or substitution, which is using something external to help the patient themselves. So compensation really is about those areas of training. How can we use the vision that's left? How can we use the cognitive skills and the motor skills that are remaining to compensate for the visual field or the visual impairment? A lot of that will actually be the realm of the low vision specialists, but maybe something that you cover as well. Reading training, there's specific methods of training eye movements or training the positioning of eye movements, especially if somebody has central visual field loss. So how do you train them to use the areas of the vision that they wouldn't maybe normally use to read and train those effectively? You've got mobility training, your ADL training, and then using the strategies, developing strategies to help them achieve the goals that they have. And substitution is quite a big part then in visual impairment, which you saw today with lots of the equipment from the RNIB. Some of it really is in terms of not using an aid, but just using a modification. So if there's a task that has a visual component, can we remove that visual component? So something, for example, a phone, instead of having the numbers that they need to call, having it programmed for them so it's just a one number. So you're removing that visual step that they have to do. That is perhaps easier in a home environment. You'll find that people with visual impairment, the greater difficulty by far is when they leave that home environment. At home, they can remember where everything is. They don't need to use their vision predominantly unless somebody leaves a cupboard door open or unless something is disordered. But when they leave that front door, they can't cope so well with this changing environment outside of them. You've got environmental modification. A lot of it is about light and contrast. Light is a tricky one to deal with. Sometimes you're not sure, do you need to put the lights down because the patient suffers from glare, or do you need to put the lights up because they have low contrast and they need more light to improve the contrast? Answer is you need a dimmer switch. That is what you need. Being able to control the lighting is the most important thing, because different people have different needs and for different tasks and depending on the outside conditions and the type of day they're having. So it's important to have access to different levels of light so they can modify that. And often you would have a room light, but also localised lighting, so using angle poise lamps and things like that. So there's local lighting, especially for reading. And then you have your low vision aids and the adaptive devices, which are accessible through RNIB and through social services and from a range of providers. And then I think we've focused a lot on the practical and the functional side of things, but I think we need to also consider the mental side of things and the psychological impact of vision loss, which is cannot be underestimated. And I think as an optometrist, I don't see a lot of that. I have a 25-minute appointment. You don't have time to talk about the emotional impact, but if you on the other hand are seeing people on a repeated visit, you've got the chance maybe, and you will have the opportunity to deal and you'll see more of that. And I think it's just to be aware of the issues that can come from sight loss. The predominant one is an issue of depression from sight loss, whether it affects your distance vision, your reading vision, your peripheral vision. There's a distinct loss of independence. And the consequences that go with that, there can be lack of motivation. Some people will describe it in terms of the grief process, that a loss of vision is like the loss of a person, of a loved one, and you can go through the stages of grief. It's not a prescriptive thing. People might follow that process, they might follow a very different process, but it's good to bear in mind that the loss of vision just has a very big impact on their mental health. And to be aware of that, do they need referral possibly into counselling services? There's services through the RNIB, there's also maybe your local psychology services as well to consider. And then just some more information resources. We've got some leaflets from the RNIB and also Action for Blind People. Those two work very closely together. Always a really good source of information. And you can always call them up and find out if you have a question about something. Thomas Pocklington is another one. They're more kind of on the social and the housing side of things. So if you have a question about how to best use lighting, how to change an environment to help a person. They're quite good, got good resources about that. Macular Society, as I said, specific to certain conditions, so they can give you really detailed information about how you support somebody with a macular problem and or diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, etc. I wanted just to flag up Scottish Warblinded, just because people tend to not think about them or not know about them. I tend to think of them as in terms of those pictures from the guys in the First World War with bandages over their eyes, and you think of it as being people who are blind because of war. It's not that. They will see anybody who has a service background, and they will see them in any part of Scotland. So if you come across somebody who has a visual impairment and needs some rehab support, very much get in contact with these guys. They would welcome a phone call or an email, and they can then check. If you think there's a service background but you're not sure and you can't find out, they can check into that for you. And it doesn't matter if they left the army years upon years ago, they have still the right to access that service. So it's good to know about. And then just finding out about the local charities and the local societies. Most areas have their local sensory support services, so Visibility here in Glasgow covers actually a lot of the West Coast and down into Dumfries and Galloway. Forth Valley Sensory Centre, you've got Fife, you've got North East, and there'll be lots of local societies. It's worthwhile kind of finding out about where they are and what they do and how you access them. And you'll also find that the services they can provide vary on where your patient is coming from. So somebody who is in Dundee accesses North East Sensory Services, but will get a different service provided to the people who access North East Sensory Services for Aberdeen. It's complicated. It's just good to find out what's available locally in the area you work in. That is it. So that is, again, a very whistle-stop tour of visual and vision impairment.